Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. That's our super producer, the one and only Max Williams. Give it up for him. My name is Ben, and I owe you, Noel and Max, a personal thank you for not ostracizing me, even though I totally dipped out of town for a minute.
Well, Ben, I mean, everybody deserves to get away, to fly away. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I like that. I like that idea, Noel. I think maybe one of the important things here is that I left temporarily and largely of my own volition. I'd say about 80% of my own volition. I didn't get kicked out. Have you guys ever got kicked out of anything? What an open-ended question.
Kicked out.
Oh, yeah.
I once, Max, how about you? You know, any, you've ever been asked politely to leave?
Oh, politely and unpolitely. okay. If my friends Phil and Nathaniel are listening, they can probably remember us at a bar on King Street in Charleston, South Carolina a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got asked very unpolitely to leave, and we totally, well, they were fine. I totally deserved to be asked unpolitely to leave.
Did you put up a fight or did you go quietly into that dark night?
Was it? I went pretty quietly.
Thing? Okay.
No. It wasn't karaoke. It was just a. Yeah, I deserved it. A bartender who was at that bar. If you're listening, I am sorry. I know you don't know who I am, but I am sorry.
Max with a past. I love it. I think we've all found ourselves sometimes at one point or another in some kind of situation where we don't feel comfortable and or we have maybe found ourselves in a situation where for one reason or another, we're asked to leave, sometimes politely, like Noel said, sometimes not politely, like Max said. And, I was thinking there are some jobs where no matter what you do, you're not going to please everyone, like the job of being the president, I would say of anything, not just the U.S., you'll have people who want you to GTFO. And today's episode is about what one of the processes or the concepts that very early days of democracy, the government in ancient Greece figured out their own solution to this problem over in Athens, right, Noel?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we think of the word ostracized today, and it has kind of connotations of maybe just sort of giving someone the cold shoulder, you know, like not letting someone hang in your clique anymore. And you don't do it like as a formal thing. It just sort of happens. You're sort of ghosted, right? Over time, you start to realize, oh, my homies are not my homies anymore. And now I am sort of left alone because I see them hanging out in the lunchroom or the quad or whatever. By the water cooler, and they are no longer including me. It is a form of excluding. But in ancient Greece, in Athens, like you said, this was essentially a borderline codified solution to keeping demagogues from rearing their ugly heads in politics, where there was a rule built into Athenian civilization, Athenian society, that allowed them to exile a fellow citizen for 10 years, if it was decided unanimously, we'll get to the official means of doing this, but if it was decided unanimously that they were a disruption. So it's essentially like, you know, we're going to ask you to leave for a decade, which is not an insignificant amount of time. That's like a prison sentence.
Yeah. And, you know, if you spend your 10 years in the figurative corner and you're still alive, then maybe you can come back and be a little better behaved. This is crazy. We've got some, I like the way that New York Daily News put it when they said, this is an unpopularity contest.
Correct. Yeah, really, 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 really accurate.
Yeah, there's no trial. There's no investigation. A bunch of people get together and they say, this guy's a real pill, or this person could be a danger to our democracy, tell them to get out. And that specific phrase is also mentioned in the unpopularity contest. It's kind of also alluded to in Smithsonian Mag when they quote historian James Sickinger of Florida State. He argues that this was a way to get rid of, like you said, Noel, demagogues, potential tyrants, people who could damage or subvert the new fragile idea of democracy. This is what we're saying is, you might have people who say, hey, I felt ostracized from a social circle. Or you might have someone who's like, oh, I was outside of this hotel and I felt ostracized standing in the smoking corner or right. something like that, right? But this is way different. And this was something that really also arguably subverted the law because, again, you were not guilty of a criminal offense. They were not like, we are ostracizing you, get out of town for 10 years because, you know, you violated the toga length law or something like that.
Well, it could be that, Ben. It could be that because it was, but again, not specifically about a crime, more about going against norms and, mm-hmm. and things that enough people agreed was disruptive. Again, that word, again, disruptive, which is really, really interesting because it's really incredibly, incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to do that in our political system. You know, it requires essentially voting someone out of office and then they have the upper hand because aside from impeachment, which we know doesn't work, ever. I mean, you can certainly, you know, enact impeachment proceedings, but I don't know that we've ever seen it happen officially in our lifetime, other than, you know, with Nixon, he would have been impeached if he had not resigned. You know, he would have been officially removed from office. We always misconstrue the idea of being impeached with being removed from office as a result of impeachment proceedings, right? But yeah. This only required a vote of 6,000 individuals in the entire society, which, I mean, I'm sure population had to play a role in this, but to have someone ostracized. And again, according to historian James Sickinger of Florida State, who you cited earlier, Ben, this happened at least a dozen times between 487 to 416 BC.
Yeah, yeah. And the point I'm making with that toga reference is that what I'm emphasizing here is they were not found guilty legally
exactly.
of an offense.
No.
This vote. And of course, yes, this is ancient Greece. This is Athens. So it's not as though everybody could vote. This idea was, it took place soon after the Athenian forces won the Battle of Marathon against Persian forces in 490 BCE, and they were trying to curb the power of any rising tyrant. And this is, historians believe that this is partially due to the fact that their old tyrant, Hippias, had been thrown out years earlier. And when he was thrown out, this guy, get this, he went with the Persian fleet to the Battle of Marathon, and he hoped that when the Persians won, he would be in charge of Athens. He would be reinstalled in power in Athens, even though most of the people didn't want him there. A word about the voting. If you're a citizen in the city-state of Athens around this time, that means that you are not foreign-born, you are not a slave, and you are not a woman. So even though the total number of citizens could be as high as 60,000. There was also, just like today, even though there are a lot of people in the U.S. who can vote, there are relatively few as percentage of the population who actually do, right? So this was, think of the voters here as the people who really had an axe to grind. But how many, you said there were dozens that this happened to, but was it based on like personal beef ever? It seems hard to get 6,000 people to have your back just because, you know, you don't like the guy who stole your girl at the dance or something.
Yeah, I don't think so. It seems, you're right. I mean, that seems like a high enough number. It'd be kind of hard to rig it. I mean, I'm sure many tried because it certainly seemed like a real foolproof way of getting rid of a political rival, you know, if you wanted to. Or I imagine perhaps scandals could have been trumped up, perhaps, or in the same way that, you know, a political rival might hire, you know, a private detective to photograph someone in, like, a compromising situation that maybe the reality of isn't necessarily matching what the picture would be. I know that's very vague, but I think you know what I'm saying. Like, there's ways of making people look bad when they actually didn't do anything wrong. So that certainly could have happened, too. And if you can sway enough people, public opinion, I think that's what the 6,000 represents, right, Ben? The 6,000 is a microcosm of the greater population that represents public opinion.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe we could talk a little bit about the process here. Once a year, everybody would get together and decide whether or not to ostracize people. And they didn't have to just choose one person. It's theoretically possible that 6,000 male citizens could have gotten together and said, let's kick out 24 people because, you know, we don't like them. So first, there would be a popular assembly of Athens, the Ecclesia. And during the Ecclesia, about 6,000 male citizens would vote whether or not to proceed with ostracization by just raising their right hand. So you could kind of just read the room when you looked out in the crowd, unless it was very, unless it was very tense. I feel like if you asked for the vote and it looked like everybody was raising your hand, then you've got the vote to go forward to the special meeting known as the Ostracophoria, which was the, without getting into the weeds of the calendar, that was the next step. And then the voting was supervised by a council of 500 people and 9 highest officials in the land who are known as the Archons.
So, Ben, I mean, there were factions in these days, right? I mean, this is the earliest days of democracy. So there were parties, you could say. I mean, you know, there always have been, as long as people have agreed to do things a certain way, people have disagreed, you know? So I imagine, but I imagine that 6,000, correct me if I'm wrong, would have been made up of not just rivals of that individual. It would have had to be some sort of coalition, right? Some sort of across the aisle type situation. Otherwise, it would be just kind of a railroad job.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it would be strange to imagine that these 6,000 people all got along together on everything. But when it was time to do the vote was anonymous, something that Athens figured out way before the U.S., if you've heard our earlier episodes on voting in this country. They took this piece of broken pottery. And they scratched the name of the person that they wanted ostracized onto that piece of pottery. And a lot of this is coming from agathe.gr, which has a great breakdown of how this worked, as well as pictures of actual pottery shards where they would write the names. And so there were election officials, or I guess voting officials, who would collect these pieces of broken pottery and make sure that nobody was trying to rig the vote and vote, you know, multiple times. If there was a minimum of 6,000 votes cast, then the officials would announce which person had amassed the most votes. And then boom, that person is kicked out, exiled. You cannot appeal this, by the way.
Yep. Totally uncontestable.
Yeah, you get like, they tell you, they give you a little bit of time to get your stuff together and hightail it, right?
I think they give you 10 days to your 10 years to get your stuff together and get out of Dodge. By the way, agathe.gr is the website of the American School of Classical Studies at Athens. And it overall is just a really, really cool, rich resource. Highly recommend it if you're into like this kind of classical studies. But I mean, this would have been the kiss of death, dude. Can you imagine?
Yeah. When you put it that way of like a day for each year, that sounds really difficult. It is interesting that you still get to keep your citizenship and apparently your personal property is not confiscated, at least according to the letter of the process, the letter of the law. But I don't know how much that actually held true in real life, because someone's gone for 10 years. Does that mean that your family stays on your estate and looks after your property or something? Is it like a situation where, you know, your partner or your kids are like, hey, try to visit you.
But we'll is keep that an eye even on the allowed? House. Would that make them lepers, you know, essentially, mm-hmm. or make them ostracized by default? We didn't really see anything in the research, to my knowledge, that imposes this, you know, fate on family members.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that does happen. There's certainly plenty of situations where, I mean, hell, this is actually pretty progressive. You know, typically, when you think of this kinds of situations where there's, you know, political beef or, you know, someone is seen as an undesirable, usually they're just killed along with their family and all of their heirs. This is like a pretty thoughtful way of doing business.
Yeah, it is. It seems surprisingly progressive. If you're ostracized, but you're not like guilty of a crime, you don't go to jail, you don't get tortured, you don't get fined. 10 years go by. If you're still alive, you can come back. And if you were in office when you got ostracized, you can still come back to politics. And what happens, right, if you're like you're up for ostracization and they ultimately don't vote to ostracize you, you can stay. You can just kick it. And then apparently, this is the weirdest part. Well, this is one of the weirdest parts. Apparently, after you voted, after you turned in your pottery shard, and after everything was counted, these things, which were called a straka, were just thrown in the street. And so people who have been conducting excavations in Athens have found thousands, like 11,000 examples of these broken pottery votes. And this is like a window into the power politics of the day.
And I'm sure astute, ridiculous historians have put this together already, but the term ostracized came from the term for this pottery, which mm-hmm. was a very, very durable baked pottery called ostraca, like you said, ostracized. And yeah, you're right. I mean, 11,000 examples of these means that there were far more votes than actual ostracizations, mm-hmm. like successful votes, right?
Yeah, yeah. And this is interesting because back to our historian Sickinger here, he says that written ballots were kind of unusual in Athenian democracy and during assemblies where people voted on laws, you typically did what they did in the first stage of the ostracization vote. You just raised your hands. So if you think about it, these bits of pottery are hidden broken shards of history that often weren't noticed by the ancient sources of the time or the contemporary sources of that time, because it's like, why would you write in depth about a vote that ultimately didn't result in something dramatic, right? That's just day to day. And, you know, people had Maximilian, Williamesses. There we go. All right, whatever, Max. We're going with it. And they had that guy up for ostracization, but he didn't get the votes for the unpopularity contest. He's fine. Why would you write about it? We're done. We did the process. The process worked. We're throwing away our pottery shards. That does seem incredibly progressive for the time. I agree with you, Noel. But we also found that there were some examples of abuse of the system, didn't we?
Yeah, we do see that. And I just want to point out, too, at this point that I said this was a kiss of death, and it certainly could have been, but there were plenty of examples of folks that returned and were able to kind of, you know, get back into life, you know, almost like getting out of prison and being assimilated back into, you know, civilized society or whatever. But like I said earlier, I mean, it wasn't impossible to game this system. We do have historical evidence of, you know, small sects of people that kind of colluded against the policies of a particular person. Because again, the fact they were able to return back to society after their ostracization does seem to indicate that this was more about voting against people's politics rather than the people themselves, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like, this isn't a perfect comparison, but you know, sometimes you'll talk to people who are voting in the U.S. and they're saying, well, I'm not really voting for this one candidate, I'm voting against the other one. You know, and you're like somebody might vote to ostracize a certain individual in ancient Athens, but what they're really doing is they're voting against the policies. And when they vote against that person, what they're doing is supporting the rival policy or the rival idea. But then also, people were much the same then as they are today. There's one funny, petty thing here in Plutarch. In his biography of Aristides, he says there was one guy who voted against Aristides the Just because he got tired of the guy having the nickname the Just. So it's like, imagine you're deciding not to vote for someone because you're like, I don't know. I think his tie is pretentious. I think his tie insists upon himself. I don't like the cut of his jib. That's basically it. You could vote to kick someone out for 10 years because you don't like the cut of their jib.
That's absolutely right, Ben. And one example of potential abuse of the system was in the unearthing of 190 pieces of this ostraca pottery in a well near the Acropolis of Athens, which we all know and love that amazing piece of architecture. And the name Themistocles was written on all of them, but it was clear that it was done by just a few people's hands, just a few different examples of handwriting. So they must have rigged it in some way, done a little ballot box stuffing, as it were, right?
Yeah, and I first off, I think that's hilarious. I don't know why they did it, but it's such an obvious case of cheating. I do have to begrudgingly note that they put some work into it, because scratching that name in the pottery is tougher than just filling in a little bubble with a number two pencil or just writing something on paper. So they thought about it and they had to scratch that name 190 times. But maybe it's people handing out pre-written votes. I think that's one of the speculations, you know?
Correct.
And we have so many, as we said, there are cases where this system worked. We know that the first actual real life ostracism wasn't held until 487 BC when a guy named Hipparchus, who was related to the tyrant we mentioned at the top, Hippias, he became the first person who was successfully exiled through the process of ostracism. And I think in the next 2 years, there were a couple more people, and they were, historians largely believe that these three guys, Megacles, Callias, and Hipparchus, were all found guilty or thought to be guilty of supporting Persia. And so they were like, all right, well, you know what? Come back in 10 years. Tell us what you think about it then. But Noel, I have a question. If you're exiling people for the same perceived, you know, violation of norms or the same danger, what's to stop them from getting together outside of town?
And like staging some sort of revolt?
Right, right. You see where I'm going with this?
I do see where you're going with this. It's a good question, Ben. Like some sort of like reverse lynch mob. I don't know. I think the numbers wouldn't be on their side. I don't feel like there's any number. I mean, like the highest number to your point earlier would probably be in the 20s. You know, I highly doubt they were like exiling enough that they could come back en masse.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. And then public opinion is already against them so much, they would have to get help from a foreign power. So if you look at this and you just think about the relatively snarky nature of people, you might, fellow ridiculous historians, assume that all of the prominent power players and politicians in Athens were at some point targets for ostracization or ostracism. You would be correct. Ding, ding. First prize to you. Even the legendary Pericles was a candidate for this treatment. We know that when they held these votes, they often concentrated on just like two or three people who might get kicked out. But some, according to these shards of pottery, these ostraca, some people that scholars never even learned about anywhere else also got really big votes for ostracism. So again, back to Sickinger, he says that writers from this time tend to focus on just the big names, the few big names. But if you look at these shards of pottery, you'll see there were a lot of people that didn't make it into the historical record otherwise that were a big enough deal for Athens to be concerned.
Yeah, that's right. And we, you know, again, we learn all of this from archaeological digs, and our historian Sickinger had this to say about exactly what you're talking about, Ben. Writers from antiquity, quote, writers from antiquity focus on just a few big men. History was the history of leading figures, powerful individuals, generals and politicians. But others were maybe not quite as prominent, but clearly prominent enough that dozens or hundreds of individuals thought them worthy of being ostracized. That's very interesting, because it sort of speaks to what you're talking about, Ben. I think what the biggest concern would be is if someone with a lot of sway, because we know that even though it only took 6,000 votes to ostracize someone, we're talking about a population that dwarfs that number. Yeah. So the issue would be if enough people were not on board with the ostracization of their guy, then maybe they'd follow him. And then that would be a coup that could be staged, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. There are serious political concerns here, but also because this show is about ridiculous history, folks, we would be remiss if we didn't share some of the funny roasts and disses and things that were written about people when they were up for an ostracism vote. You can see a lot of what Athenians thought about other citizens. Some have these, like, they didn't just write the name, they added some extra here's why to it. There's like Liegros Glaconos, slanderer.
Yeah. Calexinus, the traitor.
Xanthippus, Erephon's son, is declared by this ostracon to be the out and out winner amongst accursed sinners.
Wow. Like,
number one sinner,
harsh,
bro.
Harsh. And we have another historian to thank for the record of all of this and how it really informs what was going on with the politics of ancient Greece, Stefan Bren of the University of Gießen in Germany. He actually cataloged all 9,000 pieces of this ostraca pottery that were dug up in Karamaikos between 1910 and just as recently as 2005. And Bren says that some of these comments, those comments that we mentioned earlier, were these kind of personal political grievances against candidates that were perhaps used in almost like, yeah, like what you would think of as a campaign, right, leading up to one of these votes. So, you know, you would almost in the same way you lead up to, like, say, voting for the Oscars for your consideration or the Emmys or whatever, they would have had these, like, slogans or, you know, the same with any political process leading up to it. So a lot of these things that were written would have reflected those types of campaigns.
For sure. There were things like accusations of incest. There were also, there was one really interesting thing where some folks found examples of Athenians casting their votes not for a specific human citizen, but casting to ostracize famine. And according to Sickinger, it's kind of tough to tell whether this was sincere or whether this was sarcastic, because some Greek cities did have rituals where they would pick, typically an enslaved person, make them a scapegoat representing hunger, and then drive them out of the city. So it's a little bit faster and looser than a lot of voting today. But we do know that the end of ostracism occurred around 417 BCE. There was a guy named Hyperbolos who wanted to exile one of his two great rivals. He had two people that would rather not be in town, and he thought things would go better for me if I get one of them out of the game. These were Alcibiades and Nicias, but instead his rivals teamed up and got him voted out of the city. And this political maneuvering apparently made enough people disgusted that they decided collectively to end ostracism And after that point, even though it was still legally possible to do this, nobody was ostracized. And it was still on the books until the 4th century BCE. Instead, if you didn't like someone, if you had a political rival, you would engage in a process called graphe paranomon, where anybody could make a formal accusation against anyone else and say, hey, their ideas, their policies, their proposals, those are unconstitutional. And if the person you accused was found guilty of the charge, you would get fined. You'd have to pay a lot of money. And then there was a 3 strikes law. Can you believe it? If you lost 3 cases of graphe paranomon, then you could no longer be in politics, which is funny because, you know, it's so tempting, Noel, to think that maybe modern democracies would be better with this kind of 3 strikes law for politicians.
1,000,000%. I mean, we should have some sort of mechanism like this. I wouldn't say, you know, leave the city for 10 years, but there should be some popular way to recall people that doesn't involve like all of this crazy, pedantic, you know, kind of bureaucracy that we have to deal with. Because again, like we've seen with, you know, we're not a political show. We don't wear our political views on our sleeves, but I think we can all agree that there have been situations throughout history where perhaps we would have benefited if there was some accepted way of ousting someone, at the very least kind of knocking them a couple rungs off of their pedestal, you know, for stuff that we would just consider absolutely unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to have consequences for some actions of corruption or so on, like those consequences can frankly be hard to follow through with in many cases. And this is something that led our pal Gabe to ask whether ostracism is worth a second look today. He was citing that New York Daily News op-ed we mentioned at the very, very top of the show. And this was an op-ed by Stephen Ruddy. And in this op-ed, Ruddy says the process of ostracism holds advantages over the American system of impeachment, because he notes that the Athenian process of ostracizing someone was based on policy often, right? And people would, like your point earlier about how 6,000 people might not agree on everything, but they kind of went across whatever their faction lines were.
One would hope.
And that doesn't happen with the U.S. system of impeachment.
It's impossible.
Yeah, it tends to go around partisan lines. But with this, I think we can see the very serious and progressive roots of a phrase that that a lot of us are kind of misusing in the modern day. I told somebody that I felt ostracized for some of my, okay, I'll admit, stridently militant opinions about certain foods, you know? But that wasn't ostracization. That was my friends saying, hey, man, you're getting real weird about quesadillas. I was still allowed to sit at the table.
Well, that's called an intervention. That's not that's people that care about you and want to make sure you're okay. They want you around. They just thought you maybe went a little too far down that quesadilla rabbit hole, Ben.
But Ben, we just want to help you, man. We love you, dude.
We love you. We love you.
I think we could have so much fun if we're hanging out with some of our coworkers or something, and it's some, like, we'll just pick a point. They have an opinion about something. It could be Alex Williams, who composed our track. Alex says something, and then the three of us could exchange significant glances, and I'll bring the pottery shards. And then we can put out pottery shards.
Yeah, we'll hit up Pottery Barn. I think All you would need would be one of those big planters, you know, and that'll be enough for our vote.
We don't need
6,000, though, I think. That seems a bit much within our little podcast sphere. Maybe 20?
20. 20 is ambitious on its own. Yeah, I think that's great. But let us know what you think, folks. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you think about the process of ostracization or ostracism, whether it should return in the modern day. You could tell us all about it on our Facebook page, Ridiculous Historians. You meet the best part of this show, your fellow listeners. Also, we have an email address. Right?
We absolutely do. It's real. You can write to us at ridiculous@iheartmedia.com. I don't think people are, we need to start like maybe saying this at the top of the show, Ben.
I still don't get the emails. I set up the email. I don't get the email. This is crazy.
Ben, you're once again being punished for being an honor student.
My friend. Vote to ostracize IT.
Ostracize IT. I love that. That's a good slogan. Second. Good chant. Thirded.
We should thank some people. Right?
Doesn't that mean we have a quorum? Isn't that a quorum what we have here?
We have a quorum.
I forget parliamentary procedure, but we will thank some people we definitely do not want to ostracize. That's, of course, you already mentioned Alex Williams, who composed our theme. Max Williams, super producer of the year, of the century, of the millennium. You would have been a really great Greek praetor or something. You know, one of those like dudes that wears the robe and just holds up two fingers and looks very like a mystic.
Yeah, I think you would also have been a great orator, Max. You've got some gravitas about you. Speaking of gravitas, of course, big, big thanks to Casey Pegram, Christopher Hasiotis, Yves Jeffcoat, our shining star of research, Gabe Lousier. And, Noel, I have to ask you, Max, I have to ask you, my last question for the day, real talk, would you vote to ostracize the Quister?
I don't know, man. I kind of miss the guy.
Yeah, we should check in with him.
Let's let him stay.
All right, nobody tell him we said that, but yeah, I agree.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.